Hamill with you with a positive mind running hot on the computer. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bring in your ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And focusing on bringing you tools to help understand yourself and yourself, especially under stress. Stress is a very important thing because the way you generally find the test of emotional mettle is under stress. How does a person respond when they're on vacation? Well, they can be perfectly fine and wonderful and marvelous and fantastic when they're in love and they're on a date. But what happens under stress? That's where you find out what you're made of. Stress can come from any number of places. Sometimes stress is internally generated. Sometimes stress is externally generated. And some of us can deal with stress differently than others. When stress is internally generated, it usually takes place as the form of a thought. You think something, and then the stress gets activated. Or you take too much coffee, and your nervous system gets activated. And then you think something. Or you do a drug, or you do something chemically that changes you. Or you have hormonal shifts. And what happens is these chemicals take place in your body, and then your mind says, what's going on? What's the matter? We have too much energy here. We're too nervous. What are we going to do? And it picks things to think about. Internally derived stress is usually some form of thinking. When the body believes that it has too much anxiety, when it has too much of this nerve firing going on inside of it, and it's uncomfortable with it, it tries to find a reason for it. If you were a deer in the jungle or in the meadow and you were drinking water, and suddenly you felt nervous, you would know there may be something wrong. I better pick up my head. We have that reflex. When we get nervous, we look for danger. Some people get caught looking for danger. Some people get caught looking for danger so much so that all they could think about is, where's the problem? Now, give you an example of that. A real extreme example of that is a thing that we called obsessiveness. When a person is obsessive, they think about something and they can't get their mind off it. Obsessing. You think about it. You say, what is it? Why did he say that to me? Why did he do that? Why is the door not closed? This is the obsessive, the thought part of it. Am I safe? You can't get your mind off it. You can't get your mind off it. That's called obsessiveness. There's another way that people deal with anxiety, which is they act out their anxiety. They do things like getting rid of it. They discharge it. And they discharge it almost automatically. So like somebody who will engage in a compulsive act of some kind. It could be drugs, it could be sex, it could be any number of things. Those people are compulsive eating. It doesn't necessarily relate to thinking, it's just compulsive. Compulsive exercising, compulsive anything, compulsive working. Those are compulsive behaviors. So now we have two ways of discharging anxiety. One is through obsessive thinking, and the other is through compulsive activity. A third type is when you put the two of them together. When you have obsessive thinking followed by ritualistic compulsive behavior, and that's called the obsessive compulsive disorder. Obsessive compulsive people think something and they imagine something is wrong. They say, hey, there's something wrong here. Why did this happen? How is this happening? And then they go to correct it. So an obsessive compulsive behavior could be, my hands are dirty, I have to wash my hands. That's a thought. I have to get clean, and you wash your hands over and over and over again. I left my house, but I left the door open. So you have to go back and you have to check and recheck and recheck. I think when I was driving around the corner, I may have hit somebody, so I have to drive around the corner 20 times to see if I've done it. Obsessive-compulsive behaviors, obsessive-compulsive disorder, is being trapped in that load of anxiety that brings you to thinking about where is the danger, followed by, I better do something to correct the potential danger. Does that make sense? Good, because I want to take you past that today. That's one. That's a pretty serious condition. It cripples people. True obsessive compulsive disorder hinders your relationships, hinders your life, hinders your ability to work, it hinders your ability to go out. It affects you in so many different ways. It hinders your health. Whereas, we'll move to something else now. There's another form of obsessive kind of personality that is not the compulsive disorder. It isn't that automatic, but it's a different kind. And I bring this up today because I believe what we are going to see in this following few months are people suffering from a breakdown in a belief system. There is a thing called the obsessive compulsive personality disorder. Now get this, it's different than obsessive compulsive disorder. It has personality in here. Why is the word personality in here? Because we shrinks like to make up words. We have new initials, we like to do things, but there's a real reason for it to be in here. The obsessive compulsive personality disorder, it's a pervasive, characterological thing involving one's generalized style of belief in the way that a person relates to themselves and they relate to the world. People like this are typically deeply entrenched in their beliefs and generally see the way of functioning as the correct way of being. These are folks who say the only way to do it is. And they believe the only way to do it is. I have a plan. My plan is. And they follow the plan. They're very rigid about the plan. Very rigid. Very scrupulous about the details. Their daily experience tends to be all is not well, because I have to keep things organized and lined up and figured out. It can tend to be perfectionistic, and you've all met people like this. You all know people like this. So the people who have lined up all the duck, I was reading an article about retired policemen who are looking at their retirement savings, having been invested in 401k plans and things like that, and they said, okay, I could get to age 90 if I live on my pension plus what I have saved. And how they, who sometimes tend to be very rigid people, you know, because they're cops, right? They are towing a line. They tend to see the right way to do things. They have judgment. How they have suddenly looked and seen that their income has disappeared, that they don't have that security, that their plan didn't work. And that it takes a greater toll on the person who is a perfectionist than it does on the person who's more flexible. Yesterday with Bernard Starr, we talked about the person as they get older, they tend to play safe, but if you're younger, you allow yourself to take chances and take risks. Speaking to someone the other day who said, yes, you know, there is a big stress on the economy and it's a strain and strain, but no, my friends have nothing. We have nothing to worry about. We just have a little less than nothing, you know. Back to the obsessive compulsive personality disorder, different than the obsessive-compulsive disorder, mind you. The depth of this belief that my way is the correct way. You know, you remember that thing, my way or the highway? Well, that's one, but my way is the correct way is a belief that some people have. They actually believe, like, do I believe I'm right about anything? No. I believe I know about the human mind. I believe I know about people. I believe I understand people. You want to come in and prove it to me tomorrow that what I thought was wrong? Okay, let's see what new information we have. I think there's such a thing as predisposing factors. I think there's chemical factors. I also think there are personality factors. You want to come into me and prove to me that everything I ever thought was wrong? Good. See how I can integrate that into my life and my learning. I'm happy to learn. But some people are stuck on being correct. They have to be correct. And it's those correct, rigid people that tend to be the ones to crack when the storm comes. You know, like the tree that doesn't bend. Now, the problem here is that they have believed there is a real truth. When you believe that something is right, you believe that there is a truth, an absolute truth. When something shakes that truth, it tends to crack right down to your core. World Trade Center. World Trade Center attack cracked the core to many people because they thought they were invulnerable. The economy falling apart. Banks and savings and loans and the value of houses and the thing that we're in right now. There are people out there who are so scared. So scared, but they can't share it. They can't fear it. They can't tell other people about it. But they're very scared, these perfectionistic people who lined up everything. So let's take a look at it even deeper. This personality has a lot of things because it has it's very kind of provocative to think about the people who are always right. Do you think about anybody in your family who's always right, or are you somebody who's always right? We get callers from people who are always right. Sometimes they get on the air and they say, yes, all you got to do is bop it up it up, and they give me some reason why they've got to be right. There's a reason why a person is always trying to get things right. And the reason is they're terrified of getting it wrong. You see, the worst part of this, it's a little like social phobia. Social phobia is a fascinating thing. Off subject for a moment. The real thing about social phobia is not that you're afraid of people. You're afraid of humiliating yourself in front of people. A social phobic person is afraid that they will get embarrassed. And that's the key to it, the embarrassment. The person we're talking about with the obsessive compulsive personality disorder is a person who is afraid they're going to get it wrong. They have to get it right. Now, of course, if you have to get it right and you're straining so hard to get it right, what does that do to you? That makes you always have to think about it. And if you think about it, how can you make a decision because you're always making right? So decisiveness is very difficult. Staying where you are is good. Deciding to move is different. Let's say a year ago somebody came to you, or 6 months ago someone came to you and you were one of these people. And someone said, you know, I'm not sure about this market. Maybe we should move our money. And you sat there and you said, well, I don't know. I better ask a few people. And so you ask a few authorities. And they all say, no, leave it here. No, don't worry about it. No, this, no, that. And then a month later, you see the market went down another 10%. And you say, gee, maybe I should move my money. And again, you're getting advice from everybody. They tend to lean on authorities for information, not necessarily to follow them. And so now you're trying to get it right. You're trying to get it right. And now you lose all of your money. And here's the thing that's happened. Not all your money, but half your money. You say, I was wrong. Can you admit I was wrong? I should have done it. I was wrong to take that mortgage. I was wrong to spend that money. I was wrong to put out those credit cards. Well, there's two answers to this. One way is you could admit to the wrongness, which is part of the cure, and to say I'm fallible, I make mistakes. Or on the other hand, you could blame the other guy and say, I wasn't wrong, I was right, they were wrong. They made it happen, which is what they do, the credit card companies exploit, and so on. Okay. This person, the obsessive, this is Armand DeMille with you, with the positive mind, here on WBAI, talking about people who have a driving force to avoid being wrong at all costs. And so they're always working for what they believe is right. They're stuck with it. They are just They are absolutely stuck on one path. They oppose anybody who's working against them. The need for an occupational exact fit can also be a long-term investment. You know, these people, when they're trying to be perfect, they can't find jobs that'll fit them because it has to fit perfect. And it sometimes brings a career choice to a screaming halt, you know, because you're just almost there. And I've known people who are ABD, all but doctorate, who get all the way up to the very top and they're about to go over the edge. They're going in a direction that they want to go and they're about to get the credential. And they get indecisive and they switch and they can't do it because they have to make sure it's perfect. Making a definitive choice and changing jobs, if necessary, can become stymied due to this endless pursuit of figuring out which option is best. So it kills you. Aspirations to perfection can play themselves out in interpersonal relationships as well. Now, since all humans carry a significant amount of emotional baggage, it typically doesn't take long in a dating situation to discover your partner's flaws, right? For someone with this obsessive-compulsive personality disorder, choosing a partner who lives up to their unreasonable high standards is very difficult, if not impossible. Remaining invested in a relationship without bouts of volatility over the long haul is highly unlikely. For those who remain in long-term relationships, chronic discord tends to be pervasive because you always want to be right. You're always teaching what's right. You're always showing what's right. You're always insisting what's right. And God forbid she gets a pimple. The imperfections can send you all the way away is an emotional rigidity to this kind of thing. In a world where being in control is paramount importance, dealing effectively with the volatility of emotions is extremely difficult because, look, my friends, people are emotional. And you have to deal with it. If it's not you and your own emotions that you're dealing with, people have emotions and you've got to let them have it. But if you're somebody who can't deal with it, who has the right way, if you're somebody who's pushing someone to be a certain way, it's very difficult. Since emotionality is associated with spontaneity and upheaval, responding to emotions effectively and appropriately takes an abundance of pressure. Puts a lot of pressure on the person who is this kind of line up the ducks kind of person. You must all know people like this. The expression of anger tends to come out naturally and in excess. A person who is a perfectionist, who is this kind of an obsessive compulsive personality disorder, has a rage behind them. There is an anger, and it comes out all the time. It's easily triggered. Easily triggered. They snap at you. They get angry at you. It's not a kind, loving person. It's a rigid person. It's a person, if you had them as a father, you'd be trying to earn their love. Because disapproval is their basic way they look at you. To a person who is like this, emotional constraint is exerted to prevent the possibility that one may act in a regrettable way. They don't want to act in a regrettable way, so they're always holding themselves back. Holding themselves back, holding themselves back, holding themselves back, and then they blow up. And what they want from you, hold yourself back, hold yourself back, hold yourself back. Telling you to control yourself, control yourself, control yourself, instead of be who you are. I don't have to respond to it. I don't have to be equal to you. Now, although it's rarely observed by other people, when a person is this kind of rigid, obsessive-compulsive personality disorder, they have an inner turmoil that is immense. I want to go back to the beginning of our program. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Lessons in psychology on the air, but helping you with today's world. Originally, I said there's an obsessive-compulsive disorder, inner turmoil, it's chaos. It's a disaster. Your inner world is all about correcting something wrong, correcting something wrong, correcting something wrong. Obsessive thinking is a mind that is always thinking about trying to figure things out. Compulsive behaviors are behaviors where you can't stop yourself from doing something. In this condition, all of those conditions are chaotic. But, you know, like a compulsive eater doesn't have to be depressed or chaotic. They could just eat. A compulsive worker can just work. They don't have to be depressed or chaotic or... But with the obsessive compulsive personality disorder, there is a depression that sits underneath it. There is a sense that there is something wrong. They want to be a good person. They want to be good. They want to be right. They want to live up to their own expectations. But somewhere inside them, they believe there's something wrong with them. They think there's something wrong with them, and they have this kind of, the thing they're trying to fix the whole time is themselves in many ways. So there's a recent research has documented that as much as 70% of depression can be attributed to feelings of low self-esteem and inadequacy. And inadequacy and low self-esteem are part of the ingredients that go in behind the obsessive-compulsive personality disorder. So it makes sense. So it's very hard for people who are being so good and proper to accept the fact that they are fragile. They make mistakes. Now, another contributor to the depression with these people is this dichotomous thinking. Dichotomous thinking is very important when you think about people with obsessive-compulsive personality disorder, OCPD, we're going to call it. It's either all good or all bad. The world is viewed predominantly through clearly black and white realms. All that is pure and wholesome is valued. It can be taken only one stain or blemish to have a person completely find justification in discarding anything where evidence is it's a flaw. Did I tell you my voting experience? I went to vote, and I remember going to vote, and I had a teacup in my hand, and I put my teacup down on a table, and a woman said, who was obviously an OCPD, she said, "Get the teacup off the table." And it was an industrial table. I said, "Why?" And she said, "Because it'll leave a ring on the table. You can't put cups on tables." And I said, "Oh, she could get really upset by this. She could get really upset by the potential of a ring on a table, even if it's not her table." I thought to myself. Perfectionism is a part of this. Many people, hoarding is another symptom of this obsessive-compulsive personality disorder. Hoarding involves the excessive saving or collecting of items such that it intrudes on the quality of life of the person who is there. Very often, a person who has got this kind of OCPD will be a hoarder because they're afraid of letting anything go because they don't want to make the mistake of letting it go. I got rid of that article. I can't keep that article. I have to keep that article. I'm going to keep that. So this can be in either one of the two forms, the obsessive-compulsive disorder, the obsessive-compulsive personality disorder. Both can be hoarders, but the hoarding is a component of it. The justification for saving items, it involves one of the following rationales. It's sinful to waste. I had a grandmother who saved Chinese food boxes. Yep, wherever she found one, she cleaned it out, folded it, saved it. And I don't know why Chinese food boxes, but someday you're going to need them. I remember once she packed a lunch in one. A father may say to his wife, "Why throw out the diapers when they're still in perfectly good shape?" Recovering, of course, to their 15-year-old daughter's leftover diapers from when they were childhood. Who knows? Maybe when she's a new parent, the baby will be able to use those diapers, right? Another perspective which supports this resistance to throwing out items is the possibility that an item may come in handy at some point in the future. Throwing away 4-year-old TV guides would cause a tremendous upheaval. Since mom may want to see which program was aired on NBC at 9 o'clock 40 years ago, 4 years ago. Another determinant to people who are like this when it comes to hoarding is they can't complete tasks. They have these endless to-do lists. And their to-do lists never get completed, so they can't complete anything and just finish it and throw it away. The list keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Heard of a condition recently that where somebody who is hoarding, who has this perfectionistic personality, reversed the hoarding and now has to get rid of everything. Can't keep anything for even 5 minutes if it's not useful. Must get rid of it. Must take it down to the Salvation Army. Must do something. Must dispose of it. Can't have it in his present. Can't waste it either. The mind can switch from one to the other. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI. We've had some wonderful experiences recently with The Positive Mind. We're hearing people from different countries. And today, you know, it was kind of interesting. Last night I played a small piece of music from a jazz saxophonist from Berlin. Just a tiny piece, just as we were doing the outro. And I got a letter from Berlin saying, "We heard you. And we heard you play this music, and we're so grateful, and we'll send you more music." And I got a letter yesterday from Turkey. Email, and this friend of ours from Turkey sent us some music. The music that she sent in particular, she said, this music is by, this is off the subject, we're going to come back and talk more about the obsessive compulsive personality disorder, but this music is by somebody called Ahmad, A-H-M-A-D, Pejman, P-E-J-M-A-N, who's an Iranian, who is Iranian and born Iranian and just a classical composer, and she sent me two pieces of music that I thought I would love to play for you because she's going to be listening later today in Turkey to WBAI. It's not even Thanksgiving. Armand DeMille here with you. So when we come back, we're going to talk more about distinguishing this, and we'll take some of your calls. Boy, I have a cold. We'll take some of your calls about this, and we're talking about the perfectionistic personality, the one who must get everything right, the person who is afraid of getting it wrong, afraid of being wrong, what impact that has on them, and how in some way we may be able to help them, to be of service to them. Now, our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. When we get back from a break, a little music from Iran, Turkey, right, because it's Iranian music, coming from Turkey, sent to us, to you, the audience, and then we'll join you again. Be right back. This is it. Ahmed Perlman. That's Ahmed. Oh, I made that mistake, didn't I? Ahmed Pajmad. Pajmad. P-E-J-M-A-N. Ahmad Pajman. Look it up. It's available. Good music. Really good stuff. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. If you've just tuned into some Iranian music, we're here on WBAI 99.5 FM. Trying to look at the world and the world, how you see it better. You know, when you think about fundamentalism, huh? How's that for being right? Fundamentalists, this is the only way. And when that cracks, it really cracks. I mean, what do you do when you have five guys in a country all saying this is the only way, let's make war? Right? When you have these different sects who are saying my way is the only way. If you see it in religion, it gets really nuts. Right? I mean, people kill each other over this stuff. The right way, the right thing to do. Yet, on the other hand, if I saw justice or I perceive something as just, I would believe I have the right way. Thou shalt not hit thy child. If I see somebody hitting their child, I'm going to stop them. Do I think the right way is to stop them? Yes. So I think every one of us have some system of judgment. But it's the people who get caught in it, the people who get stuck, the people who have this, I can't shake it, I have to be this way, I have to, I must correct things and order things and get things right. Those are the people who get in real trouble. Now, we're talking about the obsessive-compulsive personality disorder. And for those professionals listening, this is different than the obsessive-compulsive disorder. It's a different thing. Don't confuse the two. Some overlap because of the unrest, because of the anxiety, because of stuff that goes it. But one of the telltale signs, is the ordering has gone haywire. It's not unusual for a person who has got an obsessive compulsive personality disorder, and you all are going to remember somebody as soon as I say this, for their cabinets or refrigerator to have all of their items placed in exactly the right spot. Now, I'm not talking about labeling your food, right? I'm talking about it goes over there, not over there. And if it's not over there, it distresses me. That's the place for the bottles, and that's the place for the cans. And that's the place, and this thing about ordering things. Do you understand that in some worlds, they produce things called organizers? And these things, like a refrigerator, they'll send you a refrigerator with 20 compartments in it, which is just perfect for this kind of personality because they have separate compartments for everything. They might even buy a label machine and put a label on everything. And then if you're a child and you live with this kind of a parent and you put something in the wrong place, how could you not put something in the wrong place if you're a child? Right? Oh my gosh. It's like the wrath of God. How could you have done that? How could you have left your sneaker on the floor? Don't you see? I almost tripped over it and fell down the stairs and crushed my skull and crushed your sister underneath it. Right? How could you do such a thing? All right. Closets and drawers tend to be aligned exactly as they should be. Every now and then you see one of these movie stars, and you see their jackets are lined up perfectly, or the dresses are lined up, and the shoes are all lined up perfectly. That's that kind of stuff, you know? I wonder if Emil de Marcos, you know, the shoe collector, was not that kind of person with these distinct places for all of her thousands of shoes that she had. A client who has these manifestations once mentioned that his wife often played the following game. She'd go into the bedroom alone and move his shoelace an inch or adjust the angle of the phone an eighth of an inch. When she would finally call him in, he would literally take him only 10 seconds to locate every item she had slightly adjusted. There's a series on television. Which one? No. The series on television that I'm thinking about is the Big Bang Theory. The Big Bang Theory, which is about these four guys, one of whom is definitely this type. He sits in one spot. He stays in only one place all the time. He eats only perfectly the same food. If you want an example of this and you want to see this, tune in that movie. It's a Monday, it's a series, Monday night at 9 o'clock, I think, called The Big Bang Theory. And you just watch it and you see somebody trapped, so beautifully trapped, and how his three friends in some way have to dance around him. People who are impaired by a ritual of ordering, they tend to be in overwhelming need to be in control of their environment, so their environment becomes important. A client used to euphemistically refer to his stack of items as his piles. He called them his piles, amusingly recognizing his own need for this obstructive structure. Another way that they also do it is with symmetry. Another kind of disorder is where everything has to be symmetrical. It has to be balanced. Having keep the world perfectly balanced can lead to rituals where items they have to be evenly spaced. They have to be touching both sides of an object or on one side or the other. I had something lined up the other day. It had taken me a bunch of plants that I bring in over the winter from outside, and I bring them inside and I put them on my shelf and I lined them up perfectly. And it was just perfect. They were barely touching. It looked so beautiful. And somebody came along who cleaned that shelf and moved all the plants. And I looked at it and I said, what happened to my perfect spacing? But that's as far as it went. I can imagine saying, oh my God, everything must be kept in place. You have to draw a little ring where everything goes. But finally, I want to talk about truth. We all periodically have some confidence in what we're saying, that statements such as, I'm sure of it, the fact of the matter is, plays a natural part of our natural vocabulary, right? For people with this obsessive-compulsive personality disorder, facts and confidences are all too often turned into, I'm right and you're wrong. My way is right. The way I see it represents the way it is. End of story. For others, refusing to yield to the correct perspective also entails encountering tension and discord. So very often, if you present something to somebody about the way things are, they'll present you arguments about why there's a fallacy in your thinking. So the way that they'll come back at you is not to present what is perfect, but to present the imperfections of what you're thinking. And that's another form of that disorder, always finding the imperfection. Perhaps there are a few variables on the planet which are beyond debate in universal truthfulness. Humans are a living organism where there's a heartbeat and a brain activity, and everything is different, and there is a flow. And the person who is an OCPD sufferer just can't handle the flow of things. They want it to be rigidly and lined up. When a person who is this kind of a perfectionist finds a flaw in something, they're delighted. They are delighted. They love to see something wrong because it affords them the opportunity to deliver a steep punishment. See, I told you. See, this is not the way it should be. I told you. And that kind of thing becomes like they're really searching. A part of them is hoping it goes wrong. Reminds me of the people who look at the person who's standing on the bridge, hoping the person's going to jump because they want to see it, because they want to be a part of, you know, the jump, not part of saving the person's life. That's not the idea. Well, people with this disorder, they want to see things go wrong. They're looking for wrong. They're checking for wrong. And when they find it wrong, they could exercise their full wrath in proving how right they were. Agreeing to disagree becomes part of what therapy becomes for them. Telephone number here, 212-209-2900. We're going to take your calls just a minute. There's a little one more part of it, which has to do with relationships. Within marital and family relationships, the divisiveness of the condition is most felt, since ideology and correctness is placed before love and loyalty, right? Love and loyalty come second. What is right comes first, and the right way to do things come first. Divisiveness can break familial ties. Spouses can be subjected to daily scrutiny, given repeated feedback on a non-loving or supportive manner. Here's what's wrong with you. Here's what you did wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. Wrong. And this is not just men talking to women. This is women talking to men. This is a disorder that goes all the way across. And this kind of repeating how wrong you could be. The expression, both physically and emotionally, of tender feelings for the loved one is often painfully absent. They just don't have it. But they also are not necessarily avoiding corporeal punishment. These are people who could easily punish a child. Spank a child is not such a bad idea to them. Spare the rod and spoil the child. It's almost like it's endorsed by the Bible. Wreaking humiliation seems to be just punishment, since it closely approximates the inexperience that they have. They like to get you to be humiliated. If they can humiliate you with evidence, with facts, with beating you, browbeating you, getting you down, they get you to a point where they feel, where you get to feel just like them. See, the way they feel on the inside is broken and wrong, and there's something wrong, and they're trying to correct the world. So one of the things that they want to do is give you a sense, a taste of the humiliation that they feel inside. I showed him, you know? I guess I told him off. I guess that made him pay his dues. When we do therapy with people like this, it becomes very difficult, because the object here is to show that wrong is not wrong. That the absence of right is not wrong. The absence of right is real. And that wrong is one of the ways that you might be, you might make mistakes, but that's not critical either. It's not a disaster. In interpersonal relationships, we all tend to hope for a little leeway in being given feedback for mistakes we make. You know? People who are related to this OCPD people, they tend not to find it anywhere. No leeway. Nurturing environment where other humans can be human and fallible doesn't exist. Instead, they feel put upon by others' mistakes, and they take license in extracting a heavy toll for even the most initial infraction, the little things, you know. People should know better, and mistakes should not be tolerated, is what they say. Don't make them, don't tolerate this. Fault-finding is the thing they do. Chronically, you're always misuse the word affect instead of saying effect. They want to find fault. Hey, when you said that French word, I got to tell you, you said it wrong. For the OCPD sufferer, my friends, it's not uncommon for them to seek out the company of a significant other where his partner's personal disposition is that of being passive and non-confrontational. Who else do you want if you want to be a king? If you want a king, you go get a slave. You get somebody who just doesn't oppose you. You know what it's like not to oppose somebody who's being a tyrant? You know how much love you have for them? You don't. You have this kind of silent hatred. You have a dependency on them, you need them, you think they're strong on some level, you know they're kind of correct because they present such intelligent arguments. But basically you hate them. Basically a day will come when you get revenge. So the relationship tends to be passive and non-conflictual. For a long-term significant relationship to survive with this diagnosis, it's almost essential for the partner to have a great depth of resilience or an enormous amount of dependency. If you have an enormous amount of dependency and you can't afford to live on your own, and you can't afford to be by yourself, you'll put up with anything. If you have, on the other hand, a terrific depth of resiliency, you can look at somebody you love who behaves like this and say, that's the way they're being. They want me to clean up the thing, I'll clean up the thing. It's just the way they're being right now. It's almost like, you know, the person's on steroids. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Personal Mind. A lot of relationships include a clear distinction between the domineering and controlling spouse and the passive dependent spouse. You know who's big with these kind of mail-order brides? Mail-order brides have sometimes proved an outlet for otherwise frustrated men who find it difficult to cope with the ever-evolving power structure of women. So you get mail-order brides. If somebody comes over from Russia, I'll marry her. If somebody comes over from Poland, I'll marry her. And she'll be obedient and she'll be fine because she wants to be in this country. And that's perfect for me. That's the kind of person that they would choose because they really can't stand the opposition of someone else. I guess the last part of this that I want to bring you, and I thought I was going to take the calls, but there's just so much to it, I can't do that today, is isolation. Isolation due to rigidity held high standards is a common result of this. Alone, you know? You feel alone. When perfectionistic standards are applied towards minor defects, the devastation wreaked within intimacy is astounding. You just, if you do something and you look at somebody small, your breath is bad. Your this is wrong. Your this is wrong. The person just stays away from you completely, and intimacy just isn't there anymore. So even if you don't have that, what about friendships? Friendships have to be perfect. You have to have people of the same mind. So usually you have poor social skills, and you're often a consequence of a lifelong pattern of rigid thinking. Rigid people have poor social skills. They can't do very much. They're not welcomed at parties. They're the kind of person you just don't want to have around much. In a novel social setting, decorum pressures people to withhold extreme positions. Well, decorum always says, when I say decorum, I mean the right behavior is you don't take a strong position when you're with a group of people. You don't listen to people. Well, no, they can't. If others are offended by what I say, too bad for them, he says. I'm going to tell the truth. Well, my friends, here's the one thing we learned. We're in an age where I believe started in the year 2000, where truth is beginning to manifest and that the world is becoming unmasked. Unmasked in such a way that it's going to be a beautiful cleansing. The cleansing is painful, like all cleansings are, if you were a piece of dust on the floor and somebody wanted to clean the floor, you wouldn't be happy as a piece of dust. Fungus? No. There's a metaphor in here somewhere. But cleansing is not always easy. Cleansing is rough. Do you know I saw the biggest box of Raisin Bran I ever saw in my life the other day that somebody bought from Costco? They had it in my building. The thing stood 4 feet tall, and it was Raisin Bran. And I said, yeah, like that, 4 feet tall box of Raisin Bran. And the man who received it, he said, oh, it must need a lot of roughage. And I thought to myself, boy, cleansing. There's cleansing power, boy, I tell you. So, cleansing is a very difficult thing. In professional relationships, if you're one of these people, if you're stuck with it, if you're caught in this kind of place, my friends, get some help with it. Don't just continue this way, because you're going to be fragile. And if you see people who are this way, if you see people who are beginning to fall apart, try to look for whether or not you're dealing with somebody who has this kind of obsessive-compulsive thing, because if they do, maybe you could be helpful to them. Maybe you could understand them. Not by pointing out their thing, not by saying, oh, you've got this personality disorder, but letting them know that it's okay not to always be right. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. You can replay this program for yourself or for friends by going to the website, thepositivemind.com, where it'll be up there. And as they're listening in Turkey, I'm sure, right now. And or send me an email, Armand, Armand, at thepositivemind.com. I will be back with you Tuesday at 1 p.m. Good to be with you, my friends.